Game day is on with Up and Up from Target. Get the party started with new and improved products at low prices. From disposable cups and plates to paper towels and food storage containers for the party leftovers. Find all you need for game day and every day. Shop Up and Up, only at Target.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined by Trevor. We've got the Des Moines Challenge that went down.
Don't worry, guys, Hunter, we'll be back soon.
We'll update the Manufacturer's Cup, a little Trevor's Trivia, and then we're going to try to do a little mid-season grippy update, a little look in to who's leading what middle of the season. A lot of the stats that were pulled were actually pulled post-preserve, Des Moines. So well, you do have to factor that into some of the stats I'm going to read, but let's go ahead and dive straight in. Des Moines Challenge, we had Anthony Barella taking it down on the MPO side with Matty O and Gannon Burr behind him, and then Emily Weatherman taking it down in FPO with Eliezra Mittling and Natalie Ryan tied for second. This was the first win of the 18-year-old Emily Weatherman's career so far. Very impressive win. I didn't realize she was that young until someone tweeted it.
Yeah.
18.
Yeah.
Crazy to get a win so far. I think they said it was like 120-some days from first Elite Series start to first Elite Series win. Mm-hmm. She has a very complete game overall. If you look at her stat sheet, it's very well balanced. She hit some very big putts, especially down the stretch. I think what really, if you were going to say like this is the thing that I think really won it for her in comparison to the field, was keeping her disc in play and avoiding OB.
It was avoiding mistakes in general. Because if you look at Natalie Ryan, Owen Scoggins, not only was there OB strokes, but missed putts.
Yeah.
Some bad missed putts.
Owen especially. Very shocking.
Uncharacteristically from Owen. And she made plenty of good putts, but I mean, you look down the stretch there, missing that short one to stay in it. Like that was
She opened the round.
So uncharacteristic.
Not to jump into Owen, because obviously it's Emily's day, but Owen opened the round with just some bad missed putts.
She missed a couple. She had only missed, I believe, one inside of C1, like days one and two, I think they were saying on commentary, and then like missed a couple inside the first 10 holes.
It looks like she missed four overall final round, but two of them were on hole one and hole five. I think it was hole five that was more shocking of the two, and then she missed on 15 and 16.
Yeah, so which at that point was real bad. 16, because 16 would have kept her in it still.
Yeah.
But, no, this is. I think this was one of the more entertaining FPO events yet. I think that this course just played really well for that division. I think the reason being is because distance was surely an advantage. You know, you saw at times certain players getting much further up the fairway on par fours. But I think everybody had a really good shot at this course. I think it was really entertaining. A lot of the par threes were super fun to watch. And we got a really nice duel down the stretch there. We had a lot of players in it. Missy Gannon was still in it. Obviously, Weatherman. Eliezra looked awesome out there as well. There were just plenty of players in the mix. You look at that even distribution on the leaderboard, like that's what we want to see more of in that division. And yeah, like we said, you know, it just came down to Emily Weatherman. When I look at her game as a whole, it's clean. Like, I wasn't blown away by anything she was doing, but she was throwing. I'll say the one thing that impressed me the most was her composure down the stretch.
Absolutely.
Making that putt towards the end of round was a 17, I think she made the long putt.
17. I mean, the one on 18 that was at the time felt like for the win was also long.
And also threw an awesome turnover on 18 to even get there. That's a tough shot under that pressure. So that's what really impressed me about her game. But the rest of it was just clean. She made a lot of putts that I think you know, she made a lot of putts that were outside the circle, gaining strokes on competitors that way, and just, yeah, kept the disc in play. Owen really lost command down the stretch there, and that's what cost her just as much as anything. But yeah, great event for Emily, and it's cool to see an FPO player getting a win so early, because I think we do see a lot of FPO talent emerge but then take quite a bit of time to get that first win. You know, we kind of had that with Holland just recently. You know, we're still waiting on Haley King. She had an okay event, but we're still kind of waiting on her. Obviously she does have wins, but waiting on her to kind of realize her potential. But yeah, Emily Weatherman, that's the next one to look out for. It's exciting right now having, you know, Silva Saarinen doing what she's doing right now in Europe, and now Emily Weatherman getting a win over here. We have some, like, when the field does get back together, I feel like there's going to be all these new names to kind of look at and pay attention to. And that's the best case scenario you could get out of this division split that we have right now, is sort of looking forward to when it all does meet up together. It's like when the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour guys meet up for majors.
It's the same thing with the Europe DGPT and the...
That's what it is. They're the LIV Tour.
Yeah, I don't think we go that far, but... Emily, let's talk age for a second here, because Emily Weatherman, 18, yeah. Eliezer Mittling came in second. She's 17, and yeah. You just mentioned Silva Saarinen. From what I just looked at, she's either 20 or 21.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite tell by when that article was written, but she's young. So we got young. And like you were saying previously.
Shout out Heather Young.
When we've seen, she needs to get back in the sport. When we've seen young players emerge, and it, like the ones that came to my mind were like the Mandahano sisters.
Yeah.
Where like we knew about them for a while.
Yeah.
Right? They came out onto tour. They would like get up in there, be in the top 10. They felt like they could be the next big thing. It took a little bit of time, Young 20s, they get some wins. Well, yeah. I say they. Valerie gets some wins.
Right.
Now injury, you know, all the things that went on. They've kind of fallen off. They haven't fully met their potential. Emily Weatherman, 18, win here. That's huge.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a similar storyline? Is yet to tell. I don't think so, because this was her fifth top 10 of the year, so she's been able to put stuff together. She had one podium at DDO. Eliezer, this was her first podium.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if Eliezer was able to get a win by the end of the year.
Yeah.
But both of those players, I think, like Emily Weatherman, I think people would have been surprised if you said got a win this year, but people wouldn't be surprised if you said got a win over the next 3 years.
Yeah.
I was more just surprised it happened so soon, because I didn't expect the composure she showed.
Well, right. This is a golf effect. You see this in traditional golf all the time. People dominate the amateur scene. Like you see it in disc golf with people like, oh, they won this world championship for under 15 or under 18 or an amateur championship. You know, the people dominate, and then you get to the big stage and you're playing against people who also dominated at that level.
Exactly.
And have been there and have experience. And some players every once in a while will come around that have the composure to just go ahead and win right away. Gannon Burr was that type of player, right?
Yeah.
Who went in, did not care what was going on around him, and was able to win a major right away. The hardest one right away. So that's maybe the kind of player we have in Emily Weatherman. Because correct me if I'm wrong, she was very close to winning another event.
DDO.
Was it DDO?
She came in third.
Yes, that was the one. I was going to say, I know this isn't the first time she's popped up this year. So.
Yeah, she lost by one.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that was kind of the ending there, that with the OB call.
She was right out of that playoff with the footfall and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
That was quite the event.
Yeah, but yeah. this is a great, great promising start to a career here. And yeah, anytime we have a new name kind of emerging in the FPO division, it's always exciting.
Now, her putt on 18 was electric, because she won by three. Okay, oh, but man. When she had
one
the putt on 18.
One of the most historic calls in disc golf
history. Incredible. It was an incredible call. When she had the putt on 18, though, it was one of those putts where if she made it, it more than likely guaranteed her win, right? Because at the time,
it forced an eagle.
Natalie Ryan was on the tee. It would have forced her to make an eagle. So it was one of the situations of, does Emily... It seemed like it was just outside the circle or right at circle's edge.
It was a very missable putt.
Yeah, 32 feet, so right at circle's edge on 18. So right at circle's edge putt. It was one of those where, given the circumstances, given the hole you're on, you wouldn't have blamed a player for laying up there and just tapping out. But what I love to see is, like, you have it in your hands.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm always on the side of, if you have something in your hands, the last thing you want to do is lay it up and then Natalie Ryan get the birdie and then you go to a playoff and then you lost it and then all you're ever thinking about is, what if I would have just made that putt on 18?
Yeah, never laying that up. And her putt was, her putter was so hot at that point that I feel like everything she looked at, she thought she was going to make. It was just kind of one of those days. She was having putts catch low right, low left, wherever she was hitting the basket, and it was it was just, I feel like the basket probably looked huge during at that point.
She had all the pressure on her shoulders and then cashed it dead center, and for all intents and purposes, it was over. It was really over once they then cut and showed Natalie Ryan through at OB. I'm not even going to get into the call.
What do you mean you're not going to get into the call?
No, I've talked about it too many times. I've talked about it too many times. Ian Anderson, great guy, great for the sport, awful for the commentary booth. He needs to get out of there.
I'll mention it because it was hilarious. I mean, we've said our piece about like how annoying it is when commentators call it over before it's over. And normally what we're talking about is like we're on hole 14 or 15 and somebody goes up three strokes and the commentator's like, oh, it's got to be over now, which is like ridiculous in its own right. However, this was an all-time great one because I don't know if there was maybe a lack of awareness on the score, maybe. But Ian Anderson, literally after she made that putt to go up by two with Natalie Ryan on the tee.
Of a par four.
Remember that James Conrad thing that happened a few years back? That can happen. He said, you're true Bank Des Moines champion.
No, he just called
it. Just literally said it's over. And shout out Zoe for being like, well, it's all but over.
Yeah, reined him back in.
I mean, even Zoe Ander like was like, what is going on right now? But like, it's like the commentators, man. And I get it. You know, he was pumped up for her. And like, it's not like his intentions are bad. I'm not saying that, but like, it's like they just can't wait to declare a winner. Like,
I think
it was like he just had to say it. He spat it out. Like, he's been thinking about it all day.
Here's an alternate thing. Okay. Here's an alternate take on it.
The alternate take.
They have the play-by-play guy do both MPO and FPO.
Yeah.
Okay. So the sooner FPO is over, the more of a break he has before MPO.
Yeah, he was trying to make his final call and get out.
His goal is, how early in FPO can I call it so that I can just go on break?
Yeah, the so lunch spread looks unreal today.
Yeah, he's looking over and he's like, dang, dude, they brought in Duncan today.
Ah,
and he's like, man.
Jimmy Johns, let's go.
Yeah, so he's just, I think that's where it is. It's like he's trying to get out of the commentary booth as early as possible.
Might be.
And so he's like, she made the putt. Let's end the broadcast, guys. There it is. Your 2024 True Bank Des Moines champion, blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
Emily Weatherman. It's like, we got a whole other hole to play. They haven't even teed off. And like, one player's within two. We also, like, there could have been a scoring error. Like, anything could happen.
You just don't make that, like, the winner call like that. Like at that spot. It's so crazy. And, like, talk about if you want to get everybody to root for whoever does need the miracle shot, like, that's one way to do it, is just call it over like that. It was crazy. Like, I couldn't believe when I heard. I was like, wait a second. Like, I have started doing math in my head. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not a three-stroke lead. Like, what's going on?
Natalie Ryan ended up throwing it OB, and that is when it was like you could have officially called it done. And then it was officially over.
And at that point, after the OB throw, then you may even say something like, it looks like Emmy Weather is going to be your true bank.
Yeah, but you still don't call it.
But like, just
there's still golf to play. It's just out of respect.
You're not the champion until the event's over. Like,
out of respect for the lead card, let him finish.
Until the scorecard is signed, like, you could go in there, have a scoring error, and take a stroke penalty.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up because I'm just sick of talking about commentary, and I'm sure y'all are sick of hearing about it. But
I mean, it was just all time crazy. It was all time.
It was just terrible. Now, one thing that was interesting is Stat Mando tweeted. So on coverage, they are talking.
You officially
to
have beef with Stat Mando?
No, I just found this very interesting because they I'll bring it. Let me talk about him. So Brian Earhart interviews Emily Weatherman, and he says, "You're the first player on the Pro Tour since 2017 to win from the Chase car." Blah blah blah. That's that. I open Twitter, and Stat Mando has this tweet. Emily Weatherman wins the True Bank Des Moines Challenge, her first career Elite Series win. Weatherman becomes the first FPO Elite Series Chase Card winner and trailed by 5 strokes in today's round. Weatherman holds the financial lead, blah, blah, blah. So I responded back and said, I thought on coverage they said a Chase Card winner happened in 2017. And then they responded back and said, well, Paige Pierce won the 2017 GMC from the Chase Card. This was a DGPT event, but a PDGA-sanctioned A-tier event. So then I quote-tweeted that to bring up this talking point of, should we, in my opinion, yes, should we just retroactively make all DGPT events Elite Series? Like the fact that there were like disc golf pro tour events that were happening during the NT, and Elite Series didn't exist yet. There was just NT was the classification, I think, and then they reclassified those to ES. But like those were the Elite Series, then you had the disc golf pro tour, even though they were paying out more and people cared about it more, it's A tiers. And so then it was like you have this type of a stat where it says Emily Weatherman's the first FPO Elite Series chase car winner, but then on coverage you're saying, well, she's the second in the pro tour to do it.
Yeah.
And then as like I'm sitting there like, who's wrong? And they're both right due to a technicality.
That's the stat keeping game, man. It's all about picking and choosing which stat, which clarifications make your stat sound better.
But like I just think I Shout feel out, like for the sake of like future clarification, like pro tours should just always be Elite Series.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there obviously there's that weird window at the beginning of the pro tour where like the events maybe weren't as popular, but like yeah, it probably is easiest just to make all the full pro tours that weren't silver events. Like anything that we're gonna call, I mean, it's such a mess at this point.
Well, because then I also saw this one that I thought was funny.
Now you got these European ones going on. We are gonna look back on these like few years and be so confused about what counts.
This is another thing I thought was funny because I don't know how golf does this, right? Because you have tour events and then you have major events.
Sure.
So in golf, do they count major winners as tour winners?
No.
So they do classify them separately.
Well. I believe if you hear a golf stat most of the time, you're going to hear whenever you hear about somebody's wins on the PGA Tour, I don't think, let me look that up because like I think Tiger has like 80 something win.
Why I brought it up is it was confusing because we had Statman and PGA Stats trying to tweet the same thing but pulling two different angles that brought in different players. So after AB's win, which we'll talk about here in a second, you had Statmando tweet, players with 4+ MPO major/Elite Series wins in a single calendar year. And you have Barry Schultz, he did it 3 times, Ken Climo did it, Dave Feldberg did it 3 times, Paul McBeth has done it 6 times, Ian McMahon's done it 2 times, Simon's done it, Ricky's done it 4 times, and then you have AB.
So it looks like...
Like, is there any player in golf that's like a major winner but not a tour winner?
So it looks like yes, they're part of the tour schedule, so they do count as PGA Tour victories.
That makes sense.
Yes.
That's where I was hoping golf had landed because that makes the most sense. Yes. Because you have that tweet that I just said. So the list from Statmando is Barry Schultz, Ken Climo, Dave Feldberg, Paul McBeth, Egan McMahon, Simon Lazat, Ricky Wysocki, AB. Basically the exact same time. That was at 8:33. This PGA Stats at 8:20, so 13 minutes earlier, tweeted MPO players with 4+ DGPT elite wins in a single season. And then it's just Paul, Ricky, Eagle, Simon, AB. So it takes out Schultz, Climo, Feldberg, and
it's a hit
Eagle.
Piece.
No, it doesn't take out Eagle. Just Schultz, Climo, Feldberg is basically who it takes out. Yeah. And so I like looked at those next to each other. I'm like, because
it's a stat war.
To me, we need to just forget the NT. Majors, I understand, but majors, I think, should, when we're talking about tours, be included. Because, like, then Corey Ellis has a major win, but, like, if we're talking stats and he has 0 DGPT wins, but he, like, won something that's higher tier than a DGPT event.
Yeah.
And then the NT has now merged with the Pro Tour, so, like, NT stats should go into tour stats, in my opinion. Because, like, yeah. By going just DGPT, we're now eliminating players who did it in the National Tour. But, like, that was the Pro Tour back then. That was the only tour.
It would be much simpler if everything that was on the DGPT schedule was just either an Elite Series or a major. And, therefore, you could just classify them all as DGPT wins.
Well, now you kind of can. But I'm saying retrospectively.
Well, yes, but we do still have Euro Silver events.
Yeah,
those
yeah.
Those are technically on the I'm just saying, like.
But they're not tour wins.
Right, but they're on the schedule. I'm just saying it'd be so much easier if just everything on the schedule, on the Disc Golf Pro Tour schedule, was in that category.
Yeah.
For my brain.
But I just think these are my proposed changes, okay?
Okay.
National Tour National Tour and Pro Tour stats should all merge into just be Tour stats.
No.
Why?
It doesn't make any sense.
Why?
I'm being the committee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were gonna be the committee as in like tell So National Tour and Pro Tour should merge because they did merge. Like that did happen. So it's already happened, just not statistically. So that you don't have people like Barry Schultz, Ken Climo, and Dave Feldberg getting shafted by modern day stats.
Yeah, honestly, put some respect on Dave Feldberg's name.
Well, I'm like, that's just ridiculous that, like, basically because Ken Klimov, Schultz, and Fellberg played before the Pro Tour happened, then if we use Pro Tour stats, you'll never have any of their stats.
They're going to be forgotten.
Because, like, why would... Because what... Now I'm going to just say, they should... And then all the DGPT events, the main DGPT events that were A-tiers, should be classified as Elite Series. So if you pull Elite Series, you pull those in.
You know, there's this big controversy going on right now in baseball that's kind of similar to this. Not really kind of similar, but there's a similar idea. Just bear with me. Where the Baseball Reference has just decided to officially include Negro League statistics.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because obviously, because of segregation, they were not allowed to play in Major League Baseball. Now, there's obviously a big hoopla going on the internet because people are like, well, that's ridiculous. It's not the same league. But then there's obviously the fair point of, well, they weren't even allowed to play in that league. There were awesome players in that league. It's a whole thing. But in any case, baseball, a very much, very, like, they do not like change, protect the rules, although these days maybe not so as much. They went ahead and did something like that to bring statistics in. This is much less important from a social aspect, but it's the same idea of, like, let's respect some players from a previous time and bring them into these statistics because it makes sense.
Well, also, like, if you have players who are playing during both times, it's going to hurt even, like, Paul McBeth and Ricky's stats.
True.
Because they were playing in an era where they're playing NTs and Pro Tour events.
Yeah.
And so then they were having a similarly full schedule to players today, but it was split between two different tours, and you're only counting half of the stats. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
So we need to just merge all the stats and then put silver events where they belong in the trash bin, or at least just A tier, so they're just ignored from tour stats because they're not tour events, and have the PDGA Elite Series, Pro Tour events, Elite Series majors all into one. That way stats make sense.
I agree.
All right, into MPO. Anthony Barella has done it. 4 DGPT events this year. He just took his finger, stuck it in the water of the Player of the Year race, and muddied it all up. He had to chase down his good friend Adam James, who we haven't really said his name much this year.
Yeah.
Adam James in the final round.
That was totally Adam James' moment to be like,
that was his chance.
To be like, oh my gosh, James won again. Yeah. And then he can just disappear.
AB was able to put down an 11 under final round to catch him, Adam James, and ended up winning by 2 over Matty O. James struggled a little bit the final round, only putting up it wasn't still a fine round, but he put up a 6 under, I believe it was, final round.
It wasn't awful, and he kind of just fell off at the end.
5 under.
Yeah, really, that he just kind of collapsed at the end there, because he was hanging around. I mean, he was getting a beatdown from AB and Gannon Burr, who was pushing a lot during the round. I mean, Gannon Burr was just absolutely going ballistic. The can't lose allegations just floating around in his head. But, I mean, there was just not much he could do. AB was clicking on all cylinders. That's a course where when you get hot, you can just go off like that. There's just so many par threes. You can string them together. Your momentum is just moving. I was honestly impressed. James was able to hold him off as long as he could. He actually was able to get the lead back going into 10, which was crazy. And then it just kind of just wasn't enough towards the end of that round. The course set up well for his game. A lot of forehands. He was able to take advantage of that. Some nice putts he made as well. But ultimately, when AB is playing his best right now, and he's the guy that you've got to try to fend off, that's really tough to do. Really great win for him to get back on the top of the podium. We saw that little skid in his season. Got back on his feet at the Preserve. Gets the win here. I think this is a really big for his resume as a disc golfer, because this says, okay, you had that hot stretch at the beginning of the season, you fell away a little bit, you were able to come back, which means that now if he does have another skid, we're not sitting there thinking, well, that was AB, he had a run. We're thinking at any given point he could come back and win again, and that's a huge mental hurdle to get over, is getting out of a slump and getting another win later in the Pro Tour season. This is huge for his Player of the Year resume, because now all of a sudden we don't have to just look back at the beginning of the season as this little spark in the water. This is now very recent. It's on the second half of the season, and it's huge.
Yeah, we'll talk about who's leading the Player of the Year race mid-season right now, because I think it's a very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But I think what it really is going to boil down to when we get to the end of the year, because we're going to have... It's hard to think Gannon Burr's not going to get his 4th. It's hard to think Calvin Heimberg's not going to get another win. What I think it's going to come down to is who wins a major. think that's what's going to really separate. So if we go the whole season and AB, Gannon, Calvin don't win a major, that's where things are going to get real interesting, because then it will come into question of wins versus consistency. Well, but if one of them gets a major, that really just tips it.
Yeah, with only three majors left, there's a really good chance that just one of those three gets one of the majors, and then that all of a sudden becomes very tough to hurdle. Like, if AB wins a major, somebody's got to win, somebody probably has to win the other two. To be able to hurdle him.
Well, because he'd at that point have four wins plus a major. Yeah. I don't know, if Gannon, because the thing that'll be interesting,
I mean, how many wins does Gannon have to get without a major if AB has four, like seven?
Four in a major, we're talking six or seven.
Like
seven wins hurdle
probably.
But I'm saying what the interesting conversation we're going to run into is similar to what we had last year with Calvin, but with more wins, is we might run into the end of the year with AB having four wins in a major in this scenario, Gannon Burr having five Pro Tour wins, but Gannon Burr's average finishing place being like fourth.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same thing of last year where it's the consistency versus the wins.
And then what happens if Rick wins two majors and then he is a Pro Tour?
The Player of the Year is going to be crazy.
It's going to be very crazy because right now, I mean, you could make arguments probably for anybody. I would say definitely for two people, but
yeah. Well, so Gannon Burr, probably the other person you're referring to there, he was able to battle his way back into a podium. He came out with a 6-under opening round, finished with a 12-under. If he would just had a more solid opening round, he would have been right in it, because realistically it was just too little too late. Like 12-under was extremely hot. He had a double on 17, so he could have very easily been 14 or 15 under.
Got there.
But you also, like, he got holes 1 through 5 and then got holes 9 through 16. So, like, you can't be like, well, had he just birdied 17, it's like, okay, but let's look at what the guy did before that. He was on absolute scorcher.
He wanted it bad, too. He was showing a ton of emotion. Like, he was, like, yelling putts in. Like, it was his home crowd. He wanted it bad. Yeah. He really did.
I also loved he designed hole 17. And I thought it was very interesting. If you look at hole 17, because hole 17, if you didn't watch it, it was the hole where you had like a out the gap. There's kind of two gaps to hit coming out the woods. Then it was into this little landing zone. And then you had another OB carry to reach the green. Very well designed hole, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he was tweeting about the scoring spread, because it is a very good scoring spread, especially for hole 17 here.
Super good.
If you look at it, it was. I was trying to see what the percentage. It looks like someone eagled. That's what I'm saying. Was there one eagle? Who had the eagle? Robert Burridge.
Nice.
He threw in from 250 feet. Sick. But you had the one eagle, but then you had on round three, this is just round three, but most rounds looked like this, 25% of the field was birdieing, 43% was making par, but then you had 18% bogeying, 13% double or worsing. So you had birdie to double potential every round. That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a great hole, because you had round two, 23% birdie, 34% par, 24% bogey, 19% double. So on a hole 17, you could easily have a birdie to double bogey, four stroke swing, right there on hole 17, which made it super interesting down the stretch, because hole 18 played a similar way, not quite as difficult, but a similar way.
Yeah, you don't always see that approach of, and obviously you have 16 kind of being more typical, what you see a lot of on the Pro Tour down the stretch, but 17, 18 kind of being back to back, not super long, but just kind of tricky par fours, is a pretty interesting way to end tournament. I think it's great. I think having the hole 17, especially having that OB carry, it was really cool. And I love this course. I think it rocks.
Yeah, unfortunately, Gavin Rathbun did not win, so we're not headed out there this year. But in the future, we'll definitely get out there.
Did you notice our epic Duel of the Dark Horses?
I did not.
No, I'll tell you. Maybe I want you to just look at it. You're going to take a while to find it.
Who was my dark horse?
Brandon Lotta took 70th, and Kevin Jones took 82nd.
Dang it, KJ.
What a battle.
Dang, that's tough.
I saw Randon took 70. I'm like, oh, KJ.
Randon took it in the final round. He shot a 4-under. Kevin Jones shot only a 1-under. He took it in the final 82nd round.
82nd to lose the dark
Dang
horse.
Dang it. The dark horse pick got way harder doing outside the tour standings. Because you're just getting players that are cold,
but like
ice cold.
KJ, like, I would have bet the house he doesn't come 82nd.
Like, I would have thought.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He was playing. He was DJing again.
He was from the Red Bull.
From the Red Bull stage.
Red Bull stage.
Shout out to everybody who came out to watch and whatever else they were doing out there. I forget what he said.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, the other player, I want to talk about two more players before we get into the Manufacturer Cup update, because I do want to leave enough time for the grippies this week. First off, Matty O, a lot more up and down season than we would have expected out of him, but he now has back-to-back podiums with the Preserve and then here. Could it point to a really consistent finish, more of a classic Matty O finish, or do you think it's just the field's weaker these last two events? That's what's leading to this.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, Matty O, his game isn't quite clicking as well as I think he wants it to, but yeah, I think he'll hang around the rest of the season. Did you see the 50-50 rail grind he had getting into that mulch hole?
Yes, dude, that was sick.
Unreal. He hated it out of his hand. It was so bad. It was so low right, yanked it over, and the way that thing jumped over there, it was awesome. That's like you never get that break.
No, he did. Now I like him though the second half of the season.
Yeah,
I like a lot of the courses
better.
I could definitely see it being a more consistent finish, but I mean last year he was just consistent start to finish, it felt like. Yeah. So definitely a slower start, but
he likes to be that guy when a lot of other players like get in a duel and are just trying to chase,
that he's the one that's just there.
He's just there, and then like he'll sneak in there like this one and take that second place and be like, ha,
yeah I win.
Yeah, like I'll take that cash, thank you very much.
Yeah. Calvin Heimberg is the final guy we got to talk about, because in the preview show, we were convinced there's no
shot.
This guy's
a madman, dude.
Yeah, that's what I literally put. I said, Calvin Heimberg did the madman thing we didn't expect. He flew back. So he played the Swedish Open and then flew back the day after. He flew in night before the Swedish Open, played the course blind. Everyone in the comments wanted to make sure we knew that, as if round three wasn't his worst round. Guess what? By round three, he wasn't playing it blind at the Swedish Open comments.
You goobers.
Yeah, you can respond to that now. But then he gets on a plane and flies back to Des Moines and plays this event for who knows what reason. I can't wrap my mind around it.
I want to know.
Like, he came in seventh. It was fine. But, like, what was he doing back here?
Like,
because he's going back to Europe. His next event's the European Open.
Surely Innova, like, did they fly this man? Did they charter this man a flight? Like, did he fly private? Like, did this guy really hop in these airports and just be sitting around and like having to fly like commercial? And like I know Innova's got that bag that they may have just like.
They chartered a private plane for him? No,
I would say it's incredibly unlikely. Incredibly
no
unlikely.
Chance.
But I'm just saying, if I'm Calvin, that's the only way you're convincing me, is if you're like, don't worry, Calvin, we'll fly you out. Or at least give the man first class. Like,
maybe there was just like a little bonus if he, but like, what?
Maybe.
But they're not tied to Des Moines.
Okay,
so are you saying the Swedish Open?
He missed.
But then if you get a bonus to go to the Swedish Open, why are you coming back to Des Moines? If you get a bonus to play Des Moines, why are you going to the Swedish Open?
Hey, maybe he missed one or two events. Did he miss just one, or did he miss two events?
Maybe two.
Maybe he has a bonus if he plays a certain amount of events and he needed to meet that, and it was worth the travel costs or whatever.
Maybe.
I'm sure his travel's covered, but like, maybe the man just loves disc golf.
That's
but like,
what I'm leaning
I
towards.
I can't even like judge his performances. I'm like, he doesn't even know what year it is.
Yeah, right, he doesn't now. Know where he's at. He has no idea where he's
well,
at.
Well,
right,
I guess if you fly over and then get back soon enough, well, no, it can't be soon enough. Like, he's jet lagged to death right now.
Yeah, and he's just going right back to Europe.
Calvin Heimberg is in the twilight zone. That man does not know what is going on.
He's going right back to Europe.
Somebody get a. We need to get a flight tracker on Calvin Heimberg. What is he? How is he making it back and forth? What airline is he flying? Business class at least.
Is
he getting the back of his seat kicked with his grip bag in the overhead?
I just couldn't believe when like he got a tee time assigned. I was like, they made a mistake.
He's a madman.
And then he played, and I was like, what is the guy doing back in the States?
It's a great grit move, though.
Yeah.
For the love of the game. I respect it. The man loves
disc
golf.
We might have to give him a grippy for it.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff we need to be writing down.
Yeah, we might have to give him a grippy.
Grit award of the...
Grit move of the year.
Grit move of the year, playing back-to-back.
Or just
back-to-back,
like...
Back-to-back, Europe, U.S., Europe.
Or we just give him, like, the frequent flyer grippy.
The frequent flyer grippy?
It's a good one.
That's funny. See, I'm gonna start the
Yeah,
notes
you write
app.
That one down.
I'm going to start the notes app.
Before we get to Trevor's trivia, I want to update the Manufacturer's Cup real quick. Interesting week here, exciting week. Discraft led the week in points with 27 by pairing AB's win with Adam Hammes's solo fourth place. And this, earning them 27 points, jumps them into the season lead here. Discraft now has a lead over Discmania. Discraft's in the lead at 342 points. Discmania's at 333. Then comes
That's
Innova
huge.
At 168. Dynamic at 125. Prodigy earned zero. They're at 87.5. DGA got some points. They're at 60 points. Westside's at 56. MVP at 36. Castboss at 23rd. And then Latitude 64 moves into 10th place, replacing Mint Disc in their top 10 due to Jake Ebenheimer's solo 6th place. Clash Disc also got their first point of the year with Evan Smith finishing a tied for 7th. So Latitude now in the top 10 there. But
Evan Smith always comes out of hibernation for this event, I swear. I always see some highlights. Didn't he ace the one hole across the water?
This year or
previously? No, not this year, but maybe I think previously. He has, because like I know that name is so synonymous with this event. AB almost aced that hole. You see him hit the base.
Yeah, that was awesome. Did he go putter? It looked like a putter.
It's that Luna. Yeah, that sick. Yellow one. If anybody out there has that Luna, just please send it my way. I know they're rare. Just, I need it.
I might have one.
No, you don't. That yellow Big Z one?
Yeah, they're like the original Big Z. I used to have one. It had a Paul McBeth misprint stamp on it.
I'd put together a crazy trade package for that.
Well, I'll check my shelf. I might have given it to someone.
Crazy.
But I had it at one point.
My rule of thumb basically for AB is like, if there's a course where he can use that frequently, you're toast. Like he throws that thing like 400 feet on a line.
Yeah, it was dead straight the whole way. Tons of glide. All right, it's time to hop into the fan.
You're welcome, Discraft.
It's time to hop into the fan favorite segment of Trevor's Trivia after a quick word from, after these quick messages. We'll put it that way.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
It's back to school time, and with Up and Up from Target, you're ready to go. Get everything you need, from first aid and personal care to paper towels, snack bags, and more. New and improved products at low prices make back to school so easy. Shop Up and Up, only at Target.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Are we cutting that in? We're so smart.
It's because
did I ruin the effect by saying that?
You ruined the effect, yeah. Well, because audio.
No, I get it. I know exactly what we're doing. I remember the
we had to throw audio in there.
Yeah.
Audio ads. And
I've got a really fun game.
You ruined it. Audio out of their world.
I'm breaking the fourth wall. Your speakers are talking to you right now. Hello, John. How are you doing on your commute?
How's the traffic on 501 South, Chris?
Dude, somebody just freaked out. Okay, this is going to be an interesting game because it might be really hard. Going to be really hard. Once again, play along if you're listening. Hunter has no opponents right now. Connor will be back eventually.
Okay.
Okay, here's the way this works. The statistic that we're going to be referencing for to play this game is season earnings for this year, up to date. Up to date, not including this past tournament. But that's not really going to matter. So the first thing I'm going to allow you to do is choose a reference player.
Okay.
MPO or FPO. Now, I'll explain the game first, though. The way it's going to work is I'm going to give you something that you can buy, and you're going to be trying to think of what the price of that might be and then pair it with a player's season earnings and try to get as close. It's going to be very hard.
As close without going over? Just
just as close as you can. It's going to be a very hard game. So keep that in mind. But I'm going to give you one reference player, MPO or FPO, because you can use either player for this game. So just choose wisely, but pick somebody that you want to use as kind of somebody to key off of, basically. And then we'll see what we can do. There's like six of them. I think it's going to be really funny to see just how close you can even get on your estimate for what these things might cost. Some of them you'll definitely have a pretty good idea. Some of them might be harder.
Give me Ricky Wysocki.
Okay. Pretty good pick. Like a solid season so far.
Definitely going to be on the higher end. Not the highest you could possibly get at Gannon, but he's third or fourth, I think, probably on the cash list, maybe second.
Wow. Yeah, he's made a bag. List. He has made a bag this year. Yeah. As of,
I just want to know kind of the upper
as
threshold.
As of finishing the preserve, he is for the season in 15 tournaments made $47,435.
47. Okay. So that's like an upper echelon player.
Sure.
Okay.
Your first, you can only use players once, by the way.
Okay.
Your first item is a 2024 Toyota 4Runner. Now, this is the most base model.
Base model 4Runner.
MSRP. Okay. Brand new. Advertised on their site.
So that's probably like, base model 4Runner is probably like 38, if I had to guess, maybe 40.
Okay.
So I need to go basically right below Rick.
Okay.
Give me Calvin Heimberg.
You're on a really good train of thought because the base model 4Runner is $40,705. Okay. So you're definitely, you're, at least we're accurate with the first part. We'll just see how good your guessing was when it comes to
Calvin. Watch, Calvin's going to have cashed more than Rick.
It's, I will say Rick kind of surprised me how high he was. Calvin Heimberg has made $46,470. Okay. So
I was on the right train of thought.
You're about $6,000 off there.
I'm not upset with that.
Not bad.
I got less than Rick, which is what I was going for.
Your next item is 100 shares of Amazon stock.
No idea where Amazon is right now. Because I don't know if they did a stock split or not. Because 100 shares of Amazon, they must have done a split. Because at one point they were $1,000. And that would be $100,000. Which would mean,
that would be impossible.
That's not possible. So
none of
I'm
these
say,
items are higher than the highest earner of the season.
I'm going to say, but how far would they have split? They do a 10-way split? Because then that would be $10 a share, but then that wouldn't make sense because 100 shares would only be $1,000, right?
Mm-mm.
$10,000.
$10,000.
I'm going to just say it should be close to $20,000. I'm going to say that should be the math. I don't know what Amazon stock's at. So I'm going to just try to get someone close to $20,000. Okay. and hope for the best.
Okay.
Missy Gannon.
For your information, 100 shares of Amazon is exactly $20,000.
Oh, I'm dirty.
It's 200 a share.
I'm dirty. Oh. So they must have done a 5-way split.
That's unbelievable.
They did a 5-way right split.
That's crazy. I don't even know how you did that. Missy Gannon has earned this year a lot of money. $38,635.
Wow. Good for FPO.
That's big money, Missy, man.
Good for FPO. Well, she's only won like twice.
Dude, it's, if you can finish in that, dang, if she's getting those top threes all the time, like, it's...
Shoot, I should have went with Silva Saarinen, I guess.
Okay, this next one's going to be probably one of the tougher ones here.
I just lost.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. The next one we have is a luxury suite at a Yankee Stadium for the upcoming game against the Cleveland Guardians.
Just one game?
Just one game. A luxury suite, though, and it holds like 28 people.
Okay, 28 people, suite. Probably. I'm going to say it's $4,000. Is what I'm gonna guess.
Okay.
So $4,000. That's really low. So I need a player that has had 10% of the season at Calvin Heimberg. Probably be easiest to find this player in FPO, but it's also very risky because all it takes apparently is a few good finishes to make a frick ton of money. $4,000. Alden Harris.
Well, that suite is just shy of $13,000.
Oh, Alden Harris might be great. Nah, this is gonna.
So that's what I'm saying, though. Even though you're off on that, though, this could still work out for you. Alden Harris has made $6,100.
I was on the right train of thought.
You are on the right
with players.
That
there.
Time you actually lined it up correctly. It just happened to be, but that's not so far apart.
Like, I was farther off
like
with
being
Missy.
Being $7,000 off there, like, that's not horrendous. Okay, we've got three more. This next one is, you might know this on the dot. The initial franchise fee to open a Chick-fil-A.
I don't. I feel like it's actually kind of low for some reason. I'm going to say that's... I'm going to go $15,000.
Okay.
Is the ballpark range there. Because for some reason, I feel like Chick-fil-A is sneaky low. It's just they go through a really hard vetting process to get you in. So I'm going to say $15,000. And so I'm going to say I need... That's a tricky number to be at there.
You're getting more reference as you go, though, which helps because, like, now you've got Alden at six, you know, you'd Missy at 38.
This is so hard.
This is a very hard game.
All it takes is a player to have like one solid finish at the right tournament, and they just have crazy money.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Give me Jesse Nieminen.
Okay. So
that's gonna be bad. That's a bad
pick.
You're
right in the sense that it is sneaky low, only being $10,000.
Okay.
But unfortunately, I think he is a win, so like this is probably gonna be pretty high.
Yeah.
15-3.
So I was dead on.
So you were dead on with what you were looking at.
Well,
because
he won on the European tour, which I was like, that's gotta be cheaper.
You're right, because I think it is only like probably like it was $8,000. That's just his
season. He hasn't had a great season other than that.
Wow. So you were okay, so two in a row there where you've kind of matched up well, just not quite gotten the price right.
Dang.
All right. Two more here. Next we have the average yearly rent cost in New York City. So I took the average I took the average monthly rent and I multiplied it by 12.
Average or median?
Average.
Oh.
Average.
I mean, I was just watching a show, Owning Manhattan, great show on Netflix, and they freaking rented an apartment to Bad Bunny for $150,000 a month. It's like that throws the average off.
Right. But think about how many citizens are in New York City paying
rent.
So
average monthly or yearly?
Yeah, we're doing yearly. So I took, this is via apartments.com. I'm going to give you one more stat that'll help you understand how bad New York is. The average apartment size is 604 square feet.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to say it's probably $40,000.
Okay.
Probably average rent a year.
Yeah.
Because that's probably what, that's like a $3,500 a month or something like that. I'm gonna say that's the average rent a year, $40,000, which means I need to go below Calvin and Rick, but still up there. Which brings me to Nick Los Angeles.
You have a really good nose. I figured you would because you just got a pretty good nose for this sort of thing. The average rent is $45,000.
All right. Nick Los
could
be close.
About $3,803.
Nick Los could be close.
Wow. $54,000.
Nick has
made this year.
He's made more than Rick.
He made
good for him.
10 at Open at Austin, almost 10 at Champions Cup for coming in second.
Wow.
8-3 at Turku, 6-5 at Waco. Yeah, he's paid a bag.
Good for him.
That man has only had two events where he hasn't cashed, and like almost all of his caches are $1,000 or more. Wow. That doesn't even like seem right. What in the world?
I knew he was having a good season. I didn't realize that. Dude, good.
Yeah, dude's balling out of control.
I didn't suck at this game. I'm good at one aspect of the game, and I'm bad at the other.
Realistically, how hard this game is, you're actually doing really well. Like, this game is really hard. Okay, last one's a fun one. This is the tuition cost, ballpark tuition cost for one semester at Duke University.
At Duke? One semester? Who knows what it is now? Frick. I'm going to say $30,000 for a semester. I'm going to say Duke $60,000 a year. That could be way off.
No, I'll just tell you. It's $30,000.
Is it seriously? Frick yeah. All right. Come on, Hunter. Locked in.
I just like, I couldn't, I had to say it. Like, I was like, I just want you to get that right at this point.
That's funny. Okay. $30,000. We know Nick Lush just made
your
50
best
something.
Route might be to go FPO here because 38 was Missy.
Yeah.
But also maybe not.
But I don't know, because like you pick the wrong player and it's like she just wins big events. Because like you go Evelina Solomon's leading the points, but like
she's got a heck of wins though.
Who knows? $30,000. Give me Ezra Robinson.
Okay, I like that.
Hasn't won.
I actually like
has
that.
Been
pick
up there
a lot. This could be the all time pick right here. $31,000.
Yes! Come on!
Nice. There you go.
Dude, Ezra, man, you could go to Duke for like half a year.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that? Have you considered it, Ezra?
So you're about $46,000 off for all six of them, though, but like that's not bad.
I could afford an average apartment in New York.
Yeah, I say really the only one you did super poorly on was
the one you guessed Missy.
Yeah. You're $18,000 off, but that... Yeah, you got all the hard part of that game. I thought for sure was gonna be you just weren't even gonna get close on a lot of the price guesses, and other than the Yankees suite, you were like $8,000 off, but the rest of them you were dead on.
I just assumed no one would see the Yankees.
I mean, hey,
just kidding.
It was like a Tuesday game. Like they probably get way more expensive than
probably
because it's also an outfield suite.
All right, a little mid-season grippy update for you. Edwin made some sick graphics for this. Connor's not here, so they're not going to be inserted, but I'll try to tweet them because I don't he made some cool looking
we'll tweet them up
cool looking graphics. I don't want them to go to waste, but first off, player of the year, this is the one. So remember, these were initially made post preserve, so we'll update the win number here because it gets things more muddy. It's a three horse race on this. We have Gannon Burr, Anthony Barella, Calvin Heimberg, right? And so you can see their average finishing position on this part at the bottom that I'm looking at. Win number, you have Anthony Barella is now in the lead at 4 wins. We're going to update just the win number. The birdie percentage and all of that is through Preserve. But with AB just winning, I feel like we got to update that. So AB leads in wins with 4. You have Gannon Burr with 3 wins, Calvin Heimberg with 2 wins.
Yeah.
Gannon Burr leads in birdie percentage at 48%. AB's at 44.4. Calvin's in third at 43.7. Gannon Burr also leads in circle one green and regulation percentage at 45. AB's at 44. Calvin's at 44.3. AB has him by 0.1 there. And then Gannon Burr also leads this group. To be clear, Gannon leads the entire field in birdie percentage and circle one in regulation. He leads this group in circle one X putting at 88%, AB 86%, Calvin's also at 86%. Average finishing position, which I think is a more important stat player
also
of the year wise.
Change a lot for AB because he just had a win.
He did just have a win. AB's pre Des Moines was 14.8. Calvin was 9.5. Gannon was 4.8. So Gannon's and AB both moved up.
AB's is going to jump down closer to 10 for sure.
Probably closer to 10. But I would I would still say that, and Calvin actually might jump. Calvin and AB are probably pretty close in average finishing position. And then Gannon, 4.8. So really what it comes down to is mid-season, what are we liking? Do we like a player with more wins or a player with more consistency? Because AB has the 4 wins. Gannon Burr's average finishing position is at the worst it's been all season at 4.8. The worst it's been all season. Crazy.
Yeah, if you were to say right now, it kind of goes back to how it was with Calvin last year with the average finishing place, and it's just how do you perceive this award. Now, this year it's a little bit different because Gannon also has a bunch of wins. So it's not... There's not the majors aren't in play yet because it's so hard to even talk about this. But if the season were to end today, like if the season was over right now, you could give either Gannon. You're never giving it to Calvin.
Yes.
You're going to give it to either AB or Gannon, and either way, I would be like that makes sense. Because like I said, if Gannon had 2 to AB's 4 and just had the finishing place, I don't care if AB had 4 wins to Gannon's 2. And AB's average finishing place was 2, and AB's was 50th. I don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I'm just giving it to AB because at some point you have to just value the person who wins. They go out there to win these tournaments, not just to finish on the podium, like at least the best in the world do. That being said, it's like the whole argument of Gannon Burr has been the best disc golfer over the course of the season so far.
Yeah.
That you can't deny that. He just has been. He's just always around. He has 3 wins. AB has been successful. If you consider success winning the tournament, he's been successful more times than Gannon in doing that. So he's beat him in ultimately the goal of these disc golf tournaments to win. So there's definitely an argument both ways. I got to say, for me, being an Anthony Barella fan, it's really tough if I had to choose right now who I would give my vote for.
You do.
Because I'll say this. I think it's a total coin flip because I've always been somebody who tries to sit on the side of the wins matter, and also because I like AB, because let's not act like voters aren't biased. If they say they're not, they're liars. I would give it to Anthony Barella.
Yeah, it is very
tough. But if you said, I disagree, I'd give it to Gannon Burr, I'd be like, that's fine.
It is very tough.
I could never get heated over.
Because I'm very much on the side of wins talk. But what we're looking at here is a player who he has won 3 times, Gannon Burr. Like
certainly.
He's won, and you know, the what I think slips up more for me is AB's slip, where Gannon hasn't had that slip. That's what's really tough. But AB has 4 wins to Gannon's 3. It's so hard to look at that.
It's such a what do you value? Because like at the same place, like you can look at a tournament and be like, oh, well, you know, AB took 40th, but Gannon took 3rd. But like to some people, they might be like, well, yeah, but who cares? Like wins are what matters. It's just how do you look at disc golf? And I think there's levels to it, right? Because certain players, your players that are, you know, outside the top 10, outside the top 20, of course they're not going into every event thinking it's win or bust, like wins are what matters. It's a privilege to be good enough at disc golf on the pro tour to think that way.
Yeah.
You either have to have the big contracts, the established careers, like a Gannon Burr or Ricky Wysocki, somebody who's been around long enough, or You have to be somebody who's just playing that well to think that way. I know a lot of players go in just looking for good finishes, and if they get into winning time, whatever. But I think when you're looking at player of the year, it's not unfair to assess it from a more black and white perspective of did you win or did you not, because I think that's they're going into every event wanting that.
Now, let me ask you this question.
I can tell you right now, when Gannon Burr was getting all pumped down the stretch, chasing down AB, it wasn't because he was thinking, sick, I'm going to get top three. He's trying to win the tournament.
Do you value plus events any differently?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because Gannon has two plus events wins.
No, I don't.
To zero of ABs.
I don't. And now, if we were to go event by event and say, because obviously you could argue, well, this win that AB just had was at one of the weaker fields. But it is tough when Gannon was there.
Yeah, no, that's Gannon. I was looking at. Has one of Gannon's wins been when AB's not there?
Yeah, when it becomes a head-to-head argument, you have to really take it head-to-head, event by event.
They've played the exact same season.
Yeah.
Like, they've played every event that one player's been at, the other one's been at.
But, like, the good news is we still have three majors to make this picture clear for us, because right now it's just not clear, and it would be actually a really entertaining voting cycle for it, but there's a really good chance that after all the majors are done, we'll have a much better idea, or worse.
Yeah, I think the tough part is I value majors so heavily.
Exactly.
That when we're just looking at pro, because like that's what last year I went Isaac Robinson, because the dude won two majors, and like what it came down to for me last year, and I think it's coming down to midseason here, is if I took any pro tour, any player, okay, mm-hmm. if I went to Zach Melton, and I said, would you rather have two major wins, or what did Calvin have, four Elite Series wins last year, I think it was?
I want to say he had three and a silver.
Three and a silver, something like that. Which season would you rather have? Just look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to want the majors.
Yeah.
When I go here and I say, would you rather have four Elite Series wins or three Elite Series wins,
and
you look at the stats, I think more players would rather have the three wins averaging fourth.
And here's the thing.
So I'm going Gannon Burr.
Right, and here's the thing. I love people talk about player of the year and get all worked up about it, but you got to look at the beauty of these awards. The beauty of the awards is that the award isn't called who won the most of the year or who was the most consistent of the year. It's just called player of the year, and they do that for a reason, so that you can formulate your own opinion and vote. And they even throw in some more, you know, solid like numbers into the system, but like the reason you add a vote into it is because I believe these awards, the kind of subjectiveness nature of them, is what makes them so great. It's because at the end of the day, it doesn't affect their earnings. You know, well, okay, it could.
Yeah.
It could, but probably not in a massive way. You know, this isn't how you win any kind of disc golf championship. It's just an award, and you know, because you can look back at any sports league and be like, well, so-and-so should have won MVP this year, whatever. Like, there's always going to be tough arguments. But I think it's just a lot of fun to like decide.
Oh, absolutely.
Decide who, as long as you're using at least somewhat rational thinking processes, which I think you could do both to arrive at Gannon or AB right now. You could cast your vote however you want, but you don't get to yet.
Yeah. Now we've got DGPT Rookie of the Year leader so far. We have Jesse Nieminen, is the front runner. He leads in DGPT points. Wins, one being DGPT Europe event, three top tens. He's cashed at seven events. Braden Sides is technically second on this list, mainly because he has a top 10, but he has 126 DGPT points, zero wins, one top 10, three cash. And then you have Calvin Longquist is the other player here, 178 DGPT points, zero wins, zero top 10s, cashed at six events. However,
Nieminen's been pretty solid.
Yes, Nieminen's the one you got to go with right now, but it's not over for Braden or Calvin, mainly because Yese's win can be overshadowed by consistent top 10s or podiums in a stronger field. So Yese's win,
if you were to win,
or if they were to win, yeah. But for right now, we only have one top 10 on the table for the other two players, whereas Yese has three.
Mm-hmm.
Yese's cashed at more of it. Yeah, he leads every category. So. Yeah. Rookie of the year early, Jesse Nieminen.
We don't get a lot of rookie seasons, at least on the MPO side, that are like so in your face. Burridge had a pretty good rookie campaign. Did he actually not count for it though? Wasn't that a whole thing?
I think there was something weird. They adjust what counts as a rookie like four times.
But Nieminen's been good though. He really has.
Edwin also put together a best new contract. kind of a pointless topic, to be honest, right now, but it's fun to look at because Gannon Burr leads in every category. DGPT points, wins, podiums,
top 10. Good idea, though, for a potential grippy best and worst contract.
Next, you have Yesse Neiman, and it actually comes in second on the best new contract,
Kevin
in
Jones
my opinion.
In second?
Not even on the list. mainly because he has that win, he has podiums, he has top 10s, and he's currently 28th in the Pro Tour points. And then Emerson Keith is actually the third one on here. And I thought that what I wanted to bring this up, though, is because Gannon Burr obviously wins this so far, best new contract. Yeah. But if you look at year-over-year key statistics with new manufacturer, fascinating. Gannon's improved his birdie rate by 4%. He's improved his Circle 1 green and regulation by 9%. And he's improved his Circle 1 putting by 2%. Whereas Yesse's birdie rate's down 10%. His green and regulation is down 20%. His putting's the exact same. And Emerson's birdie rate's down 5%. His Circle 1 green regulation is actually up 6%, but his Circle 1 putting's down 1%. So Gannon is the only one of these three that has actually improved in all three statistic categories, meaning he's actually playing better with Discmania than he was with Prodigy. Mm-hmm. A lot of factors to that beyond just the discs. Yeah. Probably just playing a lot freer out there, but I thought that was a very interesting one. Now, this next one could be very interesting to talk through. Worst new contract.
Yeah, well, the tough thing, I mean, these are fascinating to look at. The tough thing is if we don't know the value of the contract, you can never...
It's just performance-wise, new player.
We would need to actually know the value of the contract and how many discs that player sold.
Yes, but statistic-wise, worst new contract. We have Alden Harris, Chris Clemens, and Eagle McMahon are the three that were pulled up here.
Yeah.
Eagle's a little bit of a fraud one, in my opinion, because he's just getting back. So
how long do we say just getting back? How long do we get to say it?
A few more months.
Okay. 5 months.
But Eagle's just coming back. So
yeah,
Chris
I'm not jumping on that train yet.
So DGPT points, Alden is in 46th. Chris Clemens is in 60th. So Chris Clemens wins that category for worst new contract. They both have zero wins, both have zero podiums, both have zero top 10s. Eagle actually has a top 10. So that actually doesn't, again, I'm just going to ignore Eagle.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing here, we have birdie rate percentage. Alden Harris is down 21% this year.
That's crazy.
Chris Clemens is down 18% this year. Circle 1 green and regulation, though, Alden is only down 4%. Chris is down 17%. So between Chris and Alden, who are you going with? Personally, I'm leaning towards Alden.
Yeah. Clemens, I will say Clemens is probably a little more surprising just because of how consistent he's been. So it's not like I expected anything crazy, but like seeing him that far back. But Alden, yeah, it's been a really weird season for him because you saw an upward trajectory with him. And I always thought he was kind of a player that was just really sneaky good and like and kind of moving up and really, really struggled this year, really struggled. And I did not see that coming. I thought he would at least kind of stay where he's been at. So I think he can still turn it around for sure. But yeah, Clemens has been very odd. Like you just don't expect that. Like moving to Discraft, there's plenty of molds over there that would be fine.
Yeah.
For his game and that. Having a player who's been consistent for so long struggling like that, it really doesn't make any sense.
Now, I think why I'm going with Alden is only because he was on that upward trajectory.
Yeah.
So that feels more shocking than a player that's always been there and slips a little bit. You know what I'm saying? To me, at least.
A player
who's like, I'm expecting this year to be better than last year. It turns out pretty drastically worse than last year.
Yeah.
Feels different than a player I'm expecting to be the same and it's a little worse.
Definitely both not what I was thinking would happen.
Now this is another interesting one. We have the most accurate player. So this compares fairway hit, circle one green regulation, circle two green regulation, and OB rate. The three nominees here are Gannon Burr, Kyle Klein, and Niklas Antola.
Yeah.
Gannon Burr leads the field in circle one green and regulation, also leads the field in circle two green and regulation, but within a few point percentages behind him is Kyle Klein. So Gannon's at 45.9 circle one, Kyle's at 45.3. Gannon's at 70 on the dot circle two, Kyle's at 69.7. OB rate, they're also pretty close. Kyle actually leads the field in fairway hit percentage, and then Niklas is just slightly behind them in all of them. Other interesting stat
here. It's
really
funny because with Gannon and Niklas especially, you have this two really accurate players. Gannon just absolutely yanking over on the most overstable disc you'll ever see and just waiting for them to fade out, whereas Niklas has some of the best like angle control and plays these delicate hyzer flips, both very accurate.
Yeah,
two ways to play this game.
Yeah, it is very interesting. But what's also interesting is birdie rate technical short holes. Gannon leads at 50%. He birdies 50% of the technical short holes. Whereas Kyle birdies 45%, Niklas birdies 46%. But then on technical long holes, Gannon is at 31%, Kyle's at 30%, and Niklas is at 37%. What does that tell us?
I don't really know.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think it means that Heiser Flip players are better on longer holes.
That makes sense, I guess.
I'm just pulling that because I'm a Heiser Flip player.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
like that.
I would think that, like,
I like that stat.
I don't know. Gannon's good at all of them.
Gannon would lead most accurate player. If you lead three of the four stat categories over the other two players, you got to have it. Gannon is just going to... This is a forecasting. We have a whole half of the year ahead of us. I'm imagining Gannon mops the floor with the grippies. Imagine Gannon's going to get a lot of grippies.
Depends on what we make the grippies.
True. True.
I mean, if we make the grippies, like, longest arms, yeah, he'd probably do pretty well.
I don't know. Him and Simon. And Andrew Marweed. Andrew Marweed might win it all.
Well, if we went pound for pound, maybe. But, like, if it's just straight up longest arms, you're not beating Gannon.
I'd be interested to compare wingspan between Andrew Marweed and Gannon Burr.
Marweed's not, he's not tall enough.
You don't think? Marweed's tall.
Gannon's 6'5".
I think Marweed's hot tall.
Yeah, he might be, like, 6'3", but he's not, I don't think he's
6'5".
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe.
I was going to say, Marweed.
I didn't realize.
I think Marweed played.
Sorry, Andrew, I wasn't familiar with your game.
I think he played college basketball.
I've heard that, but yeah. I didn't. Okay, I did not know he was 6'5".
Yeah, basketball player stats. He's 6'5" tall.
He just doesn't look as tall. I think he walks a little more hunched. Gannon just stands up there like a tower, man.
Or maybe it's because his arms are so long, it balances out his height.
Maybe.
I want to see it. Worlds, we got to get a wingspan comparison between them. Speaking of Marweed, best putter. We have Paul Ulibarri, Matt Bell, and Andrew Marweed.
Shout out Paul Ulibarri.
On the block for the best putters of the year. Paul Ulibarri leads Circle 1X putting at 93.5%. Matt Bell's Andrew Marweed's in second at 92.2. Matt Bell's in third at 89.7.
It's really interesting in disc golf how I feel like quite often the best putter statistically is not one of the top, like, even 20 players.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Like, it just shows you that, like...
Like, Matt Bell and Andrew Marweed have been the best putters in the world for years.
And
they just don't really win.
That's the difference between disc golf and golf, right? Because, like, in golf, if you are the best putter and you're good enough to be on tour, I have a hard time believing that you're not gaining so many... Like, it's... I guess it's just, like, at that top of that level, like, the difference in being a 93% putter and being an 87% putter is going to maybe save you a stroke around.
Yeah.
So I guess that's really what it comes
down
to.
That's what it is. Because everyone in disc golf's a great putter.
Yeah.
Is what it really is.
Right.
So when I'm looking at these stats, to me, if we're talking about the best putter, Circle 1X has to weigh heavier to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you get to Circle 2, it's just such a wide range that someone could be a dirty Circle 2 putter because they just keep giving themselves 35 footers.
Yeah.
So Circle 1X putting and average strokes gained putting, I think, are the two that I'm, like, looking at the most, and Paul Ulibarri leads them both.
He was not always that guy.
He was not.
Putting green. Like,
we need to get a Yuli, like, what changed.
Well, he used to putt on Anheuser, so that's changed.
That's true.
But I don't think he was awesome when he started putting on Heiser.
No.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That's so really Yuli.
So that's the midseason kind of grippy statistical update. Shout out to Edwin's stats for those. I just want to talk through... Really, I'll just talk through one thing.
Real quick.
The other thing was,
we got something popping off this morning.
You've probably already seen it. We might still be live.
Hopefully not, dude.
5 o'clock?
I beg not. Oh,
hopefully
my
not.
Gosh.
But I got to talk about this because William Doyle at Reb Willie D, shout out Reb, he tweeted at me and said, what are we thinking about these changes? One
Bro,
of the most
we're
iconic.
We're going to talk about the new London changes next week. I got things to say about that.
What are we thinking about these changes? One of the most iconic holes in disc golf is going to be played a lot different now. It's hole 16 of the European Open, the iconic Anthony Barella choke hole. They have now added new rules. So previously, this was a bunker rule. Meaning,
I love the bunker rule.
If you threw it in the fairway, you attacked the green, you miss it, you didn't take a penalty stroke, you just rethrew.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kept rethrowing until you were on the green.
Great rule.
Very interesting rule. Loved it. It made this hole very just dramatic because then you had players like AB just kept trying to go for it and couldn't get there when they could have laid up. Very interesting. Now, this hole sucks. Doesn't suck. It just hurts my feelings because now for any throw from the tee that comes to rest in the OB, players receive one penalty throw and must rethrow from the previous lie or continue to drop zone one, which is about 328 feet away from the basket. For any throw from the fairway or from drop zone one that come to rest in the OB, player receives one penalty throw and must rethrow from previous lie or continue to drop zone two, which looks to be about a 40 to 50 foot putt.
I don't understand.
Normal OB rules apply for
drop
zone
two. I just do not understand why disc golf is like, let's take the most electric thing that happened in our tournament last year and poop on it. Like,
The floating around theory is that because they won the bid for Worlds in 2025 that they need to change it. I don't buy it because the European Open's already a major. So what's the difference?
Yeah, good point.
But
good on you, Hunt.
I don't know. I hate it. Because again, so like we had the most electric finish of all time. Like AB had it in his back, and then the bunker rule ruined it for him.
If the bunker rule existed, AB probably would have won.
Yeah, like if this was the rule, then AB would have just went shot in the fairway, threw his second OB.
So stupid.
Okay, whatever. He's got a 50-foot putt. So that's 1, 2, drop 3, 4. He takes a 5, and he's done.
Dumb.
That's it. Which he took like what, a 15 or something?
It was
I don't know what he ended up taking, but
it was
like
a number.
I mean, he threw like 8 shots.
I think he threw like
6 or 7
shots to get on there.
Yeah, like that was electric. What are we doing? Maybe it's a pace of play thing because you got players like.
I don't think. Okay, and if it's a pace of play thing, at least give them like 3 chances.
Well, my
like
thing,
make them burn some discs.
Here's my opinion on if we want to change it, if it is a pace of play thing and we want to change it, then change it from the bunker rule to just OB, but you can't proceed to the island until you're on the island. So then AB throws, and he's got to advance to the... He can move up to the edge of the fairway.
Yeah.
And now he's just throwing OB until he lands on the island. Because to me, I like that, like... That's what hole 17... They ruined hole 17 by changing... You were just... Because before, you were on the tee until you were on the green.
Mm-hmm.
The drop zone, in my opinion, ruined hole 17.
It's a bummer.
Because what it was like... It was a mental thing. Yeah, it went through. Yeah. Sorry. It went through. Because what it is a mental thing of like... If you get the first one not on the green, then you throw a second one not on the green.
Yeah.
Well, now you're
knowing
just
that the
stacking up and you're like,
you out,
I
yeah.
can't... I have to execute this shot. And my best disc was the first one I threw. Fascinating.
It's
loved
really
that. We got rid of it. There's still time to change. UC, if you're listening to this and you're the one that made this decision, there's still time to change.
Or you could bribe us and we'll tell everybody it's awesome.
No, I can't be bought. I stand firm on the bunker rule. Stand firm on it. We do have a Silas Select, but I don't feel right doing it without Connor.
I actually have a way fun. I thought about this when Silas brought it. I'm like, I think it'd be funnier if we both guess. And if we get it right, we just have to know that that doesn't count. We just wasted our probably 1 in a million guess.
Okay.
So, we agreed, though, this does not count. If
Correct.
You guess it, it's just a bummer.
It's just an asterisk.
Yeah. It's just a huge bummer.
It's just something where you know you got it, but you can't.
Yeah.
Okay. That's depressing, but.
I think that's what makes it funny. It's like we're trying to now avoid it.
Destroyer.
Yeah. I just guess like something super Wraith. I'm going to cry, dude. Like, I don't want to guess it. No.
Oh my gosh,
that was freaking that was scary.
I felt the rim with my thumb, and I was like, "That's a destroyer rim if I've ever felt it." I was like, I just did it. It doesn't count.
Like,
it was a PD2.
That's the closest we've ever gotten. Imagine wasting your 1 in a million guess on an asteroid.
I think that's the closest we've ever gotten.
Holy cow!
Wow.
Woo.
Thank goodness. All right, that's Grip Locked. Appreciate y'all. We'll talk to you again soon.
It's back to school time, and with Up and Up from Target, you're ready to go. Get everything you need, from first aid and personal care to paper towels, snack bags, and more. New and improved products at low prices make back to school so easy. Shop Up and Up, only at Target.
As school germs return, rest easy. Clorox has got your back to school.
Ugh, you're back?
It is I, your kid's germy desk, and I've got things to say. I've been sneezed on, used as a tissue, there's chewed up gum under my...
Calm down. I'll get my Clorox disinfecting wipes.
Oh, and can you please get these sweaty gym clothes off of me?
School, am I right?
Clorox disinfecting wipes kill 99.9% of viruses and bacteria and clean hundreds of messes on hard, non-porous surfaces when used as directed.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a savory sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and crispy hash browns. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.